Irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to Writer's Block with Jim Christina, Bobby Bell, and Richard Polinelli, only on LA Talk Radio.
Island life does have its charms. Constant sun, steady breeze. Nothing ever happens here. Few are those who do not fall beneath the spell.
That is Richard Schindel, and the name of the tune is The Island. And I just thought it most appropriate for this evening's program, considering that one of the books we'll be discussing is about an island. So there you have it. This is LA Talk Radio. It is Thursday evening. You are listening to The Writer's Block. I am Jim Christina, your host, in studio tonight with my handsome and oh-so-charming co-host, Richard Polinelli. He became actually permanent today because he got his own folder. Has his name on it.
Hey, you can't throw me out now. I got my
name. Well, I can. We'll just leave the folder on the table. And we're just, I have to, hi, Rich.
How's it going?
I wasn't sure if I was going to make it in tonight because I had a little rotor-rootering done to my heart this morning. And
yeah.
And but they did good. My doctor finished up fast and got me out of the hospital fast. And
yeah. Well, I'm glad to be looking across the table
yeah.
and seeing you there instead of sitting in a room talking to myself like so many first dates of mine ended.
Like your prom date?
Pretty much, yeah. So I'm yeah, amazingly, happy to see you there.
My prom date went pretty much the same way. Okay. Let's Bobby Jean, you're with us. We have, of course, Bobby Jean Bell sitting over in Albuquerque, New Mexico. Bobby.
I am here.
You
Good evening,
are.
Gentlemen. I'm
Hi.
Happy to be part of this trio.
Oh, yes. Well, you know, we're us. You know, what can we say? After almost 3 years on the show together, we still can't figure out what the hell we're doing. But hey, we do it well. You know, everybody finds out we do it the best.
Yeah. Organized chaos at its best.
There it is.
There it is.
There it is. So, Bobby, how are things over in New Mexico?
Oh, things are great. We actually have a little bit of a touch of spring here with some blossoms happening on trees. I have no idea what kind of trees they are, but they
Green?
Seem to suddenly be blooming like overnight.
Oh, well, that's a good thing.
Yeah.
Possibly our guest this evening could tell us the same story about where she's from.
Possibly.
Being
that she's from Oklahoma, yeah.
Yeah. You know what? I'm so excited because I have a new microphone.
Oh,
I have a new one, and I don't have that big round thing in my face anymore. I got cucaracha. Anyway.
He's definitely like a kid at Christmas time. He's just
I was so stoked when I came in here. I did a little fairy dance.
Inspired by one of the books that I know you read for tonight.
I did. Oh, my God. Oh, yeah. That book is, we'll get into it, but oh, wow. Talk about fantastical. All right, Richard, take it away.
All right. If you are a first-time author and you've just typed those glorious words, the end, on your manuscript, you probably are sitting there thinking your work is all done. Now you can just sit back and watch the royalty checks fly in, right? Wrong. You still need to have that manuscript edited, formatted, and you need to create a book cover for it, and then the hard work starts. You have to have it marketed so that readers will even know that your book is out there to be read. Now, before you throw your manuscript in the trash, take heart. The good folks at Black Dog Publishing and Tuscany Bay Books are ready to do all the heavy lifting for you to get your book in front of those readers so you can get paid and at a royalty rate unmatched in the industry. And more importantly, it allows you to get back to the important work. Writing your next novel. That's what you should be doing.
Well, that's what you do.
That's what I try to do.
I read other people's novels.
So for more information on the program, you can call Tuscany Bay Books at 805-795-3165. You can email him at jchristina@tuscanybaybooks.com or rpaulinelli@tuscanybaybooks.com, or you can check out the website at blackdogpublishing.co. Make sure it's not C-O-M, just C-O.
Right, C-O.
And they will get you on your way to publishing success.
That's it.
And Mr. Christina.
Yes, sir.
I am a man in search of Western wear for next month's Santa Clarita Cowboy Festival.
Yes. Well, you know, I have...
Can you help me out?
It just so happens.
All right.
Okay, well, tell Out West Shop is your online source for top brands that are a reflection of the equestrian and Western lifestyles. So you shop for unique and distinctive apparel, fashion accessories. That would be for you, fashion accessories.
Yeah, definitely.
Home decor, general merchandise. National brands include Rock Mountain Ranchwear, Scully Leather Company, and American West Handbags. That's just to name a few. Shop online at www.outwestshop.com, or you can go to scvoutwest.com. It takes into a different website and a different catalog. Enter code WB100 and you get $10 off your order. So there you go. And you can call them toll free. And I happen to know the guy that's going to answer the phone. And the number there is 877-340-9378.
I want one of those Walt Longmire hats, but in black. But the problem is with my big head, they can't find a cow big enough yet. So,
Well,
I'm working on that. But, you know, that that denim shirt that he wears all the time,
right,
Richard, would also be a great shirt for you.
There you go. Oh, yes. Oh, yes. Definitely. I agree.
And it even comes in tall sizes. In fact, we might even have one on hand. I could just put right in the mail to you tomorrow.
Are you getting the idea that Out West is owned by somebody who's on the radio with us right now?
I'm not sure, but I think it might just be, yes.
Yes, well, and those accessories you were looking for, there's like 18 styles of bolos up there now for you.
I'm wearing a bolo tie. Yep, yep, yep. Don't look at me like that.
I was thinking actually more a garter, but bolo will
work. We got those too.
All right. Enough frivolity. Since 2009, Target Freight has had a full truckload service, TFM truckload, and LTL service that is the best in the industry. Not only are they exceptionally good at what they do, but they work hard to make your full truckload shipping or LTL experience unparalleled using their customized traffic movement program. So call TFM Truckload or Target Freight Management LTL today. 844-653-7789. Ask for Mike Matrusti for Truckload or any of the fine account managers at 888-653-1323 for your LTL shipping needs. Tell them you heard it on the Writer's Block and TFM will have a little something extra for you. Or if you prefer, you can always go online and shop at www.targetfmi.com. And if you're shipping stuff, they are probably the best in the industry. So give them a holler. Okay, we have a lady on that's a repeat customer.
She is.
And she actually, I don't know. Most people we get on here don't ever want anything to do with this again. But
not true.
That's because they love you, Bobby.
Yep.
That's it. Anyway, this lady is?
She calls Enid, Oklahoma, her home. I'm going to make you wait for the name on this one. She hails from Enid, Oklahoma.
I know the name.
You know the name. They don't hang in there. She has been writing for several years, and it is an award-winning, three-time published author who is always working on her next book, like we just talked about.
Aren't we all?
Some of us are, yes. She spends her days, nights, and weekends making up stories that we all do, yes. She attended Phillips University, the University of Central Oklahoma, and is a graduate of the University of Oklahoma. That's a lot of university in there.
That's a mouthful without taking a breath.
That is.
Okay.
She is a member of the Enid Writers Club and the Oklahoma Writers Federation, Incorporated. There is always, she says, another story weaving itself around in her brain trying to come out, and there just aren't enough hours in the day, and boy, don't all of us agree with that.
We do, especially us writers.
So let us welcome back Peggy Chambers.
Hi, Peggy.
I had no idea so many people were in that little studio.
Well, you know, we have to let them clap every now and then because otherwise they get unruly.
Oh.
Bobby knows.
Well, it's great to be here. Thank you for inviting me.
We're so glad to have you back. because we all just loved your Secrets of Sandhill Island so much. Everybody waited with bated breath for the Stones of Sandhill Island to come out, which it finally did, which was a journey in and of itself, I'm sure. If you'd like to share a little bit of that with our listening audience, because it's a great story.
No, it just never fails with a publisher. They have more than one writer, and they have other things to do besides just spend all their time on you, I guess.
Sure.
And I can't figure that out, but it took a while. It just took a while.
Yeah, it did. But it was almost a year after your first guess about when it was going to be available.
Yeah, it really was.
Yeah.
More than a year. I thought it would be a lot sooner. But
well, it was worth the wait.
I was hoping it would be out. Thank you. I was hoping it would be out for summer for a beach read, but it didn't make it. It was January.
Now I noticed in the Stones of Sandhill Island, I have to admit to you, I am remiss. I did not read the book only because I've got so much stuff going on with medical and everything else. But I did read Return to Glomas Valley, of which we will be discussing in a minute. But I did notice in the Secrets or the Stones of Sandhill Island that some of the people, actually most of the people that were in the last book, are not in this book. The locations are, and some of the places are, but the people are not. Mm-hmm. So this
is really part of a series, not a sequel.
Right.
So some of the people are in there, some of the smaller characters, but not the main characters.
Right. Right. So, okay, you guys who read Sandhill Island, jump in there anytime.
I was just impressed that you did that because most, even in series, you're usually creating these main characters that people are going to buy into and they want to come back and find out more about what's going on with them. So when I read this and I noticed, okay, it's not the same main characters, how did you sell that to your publisher, and was there a different process in writing this when you have to recreate people and establish new characters like that?
Well, the publisher really didn't say anything about that. They seemed to think this was okay. I thought that really the island itself was a character. I mean, the Sandhill Island seems to be a main character. And I brought back Sam, the chef at Lachey, and I brought back Poppy, who was the little guy on the island everybody loved, and he knew everything that went on. And he still does, but he's still there.
Yeah.
But I wanted to incorporate the major out of the Hurricane Hunters, and I didn't really get her in the first book very, very much, and I wanted to make her a main character in the second book, and things just started to take shape after that.
Mm-hmm.
Well, and as in the first book, your characters are all just so enticing and beguiling, and we just love them. Even Joe Franks, when he's first introduced, who we learn is not a very nice guy, but I even have a little bit of a warm spot for him. He was in a very tragic situation as well, and one could almost be a little sympathetic. You take us another direction pretty quickly, but you know, from the beginning, we kind of feel something for each one of these characters. And once again, you've given us strong women. Thank you so much. I always thank the author for strong women.
Yes, you do.
Yes, and you there are several in this book, and I really enjoy that as a reader.
Well,
I really thought Joe Frank, I wanted to show more than one side of the story, and what he did was wrong. What he did was an accident. And he certainly paid the price, but and he really wasn't a very good guy anyway. So
no, he turns out to not be.
No.
Yeah.
The question I have, Peggy, is when you were writing the Stones of Sandhill Island, did you start it before you finished the Secrets of Sandhill Island, or did you take
before.
A hiatus and then start the new book?
I probably took a couple of months before I started the next book.
Oh, okay.
And I have started working on a third one, but it hasn't taken shape too fast, but it will.
Mm-hmm.
It'll get going.
No, will that one also be, it'll be set on the island, but you'll have a different set of primary characters driving the story, or are you going to kind of go back and visit some of the already established?
I will go back and visit some of them. The next one is going to be Smugglers of Sandhill Island.
Mm-hmm.
All right, I'm writing it down.
I'm you got my attention.
Again, we're going to have strong female characters, of course, because that's just how I write, I guess.
Well, at Sand Hill Island, if refresh my memory, is off of Galveston.
It's off the coast of Corpus Christi.
Corpus Christi,
it doesn't really exist,
yeah.
But I made it up. There are a lot of little islands out there.
Yes, yes.
Yeah. Now, there's another character that you introduce, and just as you said, the island is like a character. I have to say Lily plays a very important role. Tell us a little bit about Lily and why you chose to add Lily to the story.
Lily is a dog that gets dumped on the island, and she's pregnant, and it's her first litter of pups, and her owner just took her over the island, dumped her, and left, and she couldn't get back. So it's a small island. Everybody knows everybody, and everybody knows there's suddenly a dog on the island that hadn't been there before. And I just wanted her. She seemed like she would be a good, she's comfort to Billy. Mm-hmm. Billy needs a lot of comfort at this time in her life. And this dog is in dire straits just like Billy is, and they form a bond. And she ends up having her litter of pups underneath the house where Billy lives. And so Billy takes her in, even though she didn't think she wanted a dog.
Yeah, she's a wonderful symbol of kind of a love, the theme of the power of love that weaves through the book, I thought. And because she has pups, it allows several characters to get involved with her instead of just a single dog. You know, she kind of becomes the piece that unifies relationships with several of the characters. I just thought it was brilliant to use her that way.
I liked her, and I love dogs, and I imagined her to be a little brindle, skinny little hound of some sort that, you know, was lost, needed some help.
Yeah.
Richard and I love dogs too.
Oh yeah.
I have to put mine away when Richard comes over.
Oh no!
No, she loves Richard.
Oh, yeah.
You can't get her off of him.
No.
Oh, even, I see.
We have to bribe her with what? Peanut butter,
and cookies, everything. And all kinds of stuff. And that doesn't work.
Yeah. My dog loves peanut butter.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
And I can't get him to trade his dog for my dog, and I can't really blame him. So you know.
Everybody loves the Belzer.
Yeah.
So the title of this book, the Stones of Sand Hill Island, make reference to what?
Mm-hmm. Well, Billy's last name is Stone.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
And she's using these meditation stones to help her heal her psyche after the death of her family. And she uses them and stacks them up every day on the beach. And she does her meditation, and these stones, according to her doctor, will help her. Just every time she places one on top of the other, she releases a little bit of pent-up energy, pent-up anger, it's helping her just get back to normal.
Mm-hmm.
And she has some larger ones on the front porch that her mother likes, and she puts them there just for decoration, and they hold the door open, the screen door open to the porch. And they play a major role in the end of the book.
The significance is her name is Stone, and she has stones that help her through the pain and suffering of having lost her family.
Right.
Okay. So we couldn't have called the book The Boulders of Sand Hill Island then.
No, would not have played.
Well, it would have been harder to stack boulders.
Well, I was just thinking, you know, here's this little girl trying to stack a boulder. Maybe your dog will help her.
Yeah, it's not going to work. You know, there's a scene, and I'm not going to give away where it is or who is involved in this, but there's a burial at sea, and it's a very powerful, very emotional sequence that some of the characters are going to go through. I'm trying not to do spoilers. Mm-hmm. How hard was it for you to write that sequence? Because, like I said, it's a very emotional scene. Did you find it hard to get through as a writer, or did you have this laid out already and it was, you know, you just kind of were able to just lay it out without too much issues?
it seemed like the proper burial for this character. She loved the ocean,
right.
And so it seemed like a good place for her. But honestly, I was at the gym one night talking to some friends, and I said, what do you know about cremation? You know, they all know what I do, so they don't make too much fun of me. But anyway, they said, what do you know about cremation? When you get these ashes back, are they like fine little particles? Are they big old chunks or what? Mm-hmm. And one of the ladies who happened to know from experience told me that you can get it more than one way, depending on how the body is cremated. And because I was trying to think, would the particles float down into the water, or would they be chunks that would just drop into the water?
They float and, away on the water.
Yeah.
Yeah, they kind of float
yes.
at the top.
Yes, having done it twice. With both
have
my
you?
Folks. Both my okay. folks, yeah.
Yeah, my mother has ordered me under gunpoint that's way we're going to have to dispense with her when her time comes. So it was an interesting scene because, you know, thinking of that and then the conversation with her, I was just kind of, it seemed like you really researched that a lot. I was just wondering how much of a process it was for you to write it because it's very well written.
Mm-hmm. Well, I love the water, and I've often told my husband, I thought that's what they should do, you know, just put my ashes out on the water. And he says, you better tell the kids because you might end up in a mud puddle. So, you know, be specific what kind of body of water you want.
Yeah.
And on a non-windy day, right?
Oh, I have to tell you, that is true. That's something you really have to watch out for because you can wind up breathing in your aunt.
Yeah.
Oh.
It's not a fun process. And we actually cremated my mother before she was dead, so no. I'm lying.
You what?
We cremated my mother before she was dead.
That
sounds like a book.
It does.
Burn mom before she's gone.
Or that could be a country western song.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Pre-death cremation.
Yeah, I like it.
Throw in a hound and a six-pack of beer, and you got a country western song.
And a pickup truck
that's broke down.
Oh my God!
Peggy, do you play piano or do you sing? Billy is such a wonderful character, and she's so talented. I wondered if jazz and music have a tug on your heart.
I grew up playing piano, and I did have some vocal music in school. I haven't done that in years, but I've always been a music lover, and I do like jazz. And she sings some Billie Holiday. She also sings some Janis Joplin, which is jazz or blues, I guess more blues. Mm-hmm. But to me, I could just see her standing out there on the deck, you know, in her long aqua gown, singing to this group of people. And there is a nice jazz area in Corpus Christi that I have never been to that I want to try to make. There's a place in there that I talk about, Snoopy's Pier, that is a restaurant on the beach in Corpus Christi that is also is for real as well. And I have not been there. I've been to Corpus Christi, but I haven't been to those places. And I want to go back, and I want to go try to visit those places I wrote about that I just researched on the internet.
Mm-hmm. Well, yeah, I mean,
well, it just felt as if this character was to be a singer, then kind of based on her story and what she's struggling with, jazz just seemed, you know, jazz and blues just seemed also really appropriate for her.
Yeah, that's it. Mm-hmm.
And I would love in a future book, I'd like to know more about Alfred Stringer. He's got to have a really interesting story.
Yes, I liked him. I wrote a full chapter that I ended up dispensing with because it was just too much, but I used parts of it. And I thought he could be a good character, too.
Yeah.
He obviously was there for her whenever she needed it.
There's go ahead, Bill.
Yeah. No, I was just going to say I found that really remarkable, even though together they're, you know, a powerful music combo, but that he would without there being a romantic relationship, that he would really stick by her. And I just thought, you know, this is a really neat guy. We need to know more about him.
Putting on my writer's hat and picking your writer's brain, Peggy, do you often find yourself disposing of sections of chapters or a whole chapter because it's just isn't working for you?
You know, in Secrets of Sand Hill Island, I had to, at my editor's insistence, lose four chapters that really, you know, it's like killing your children off
right,
or something.
Right,
it's
right.
Very difficult to do. And one of them was this character that was the major in the Air Force. She was a meteorologist. And I really liked her, and I wanted to bring her back in the second one. So since I didn't really get to talk about her much in the first book, I hung on to those chapters and used them again, at least part of them, used bits and pieces mm-hmm. out of them. And mm-hmm.
So you do recycle
killing her off. Yeah, I do. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Let's get this. We have one more commercial we have to do. Let's get that out of the way because there's some other stuff we'd like to talk to you about. So hang tough. We'll be back in about 30 seconds or a little bit more. Imagine deep blue skies, majestic mountains, and acres of lush green orange trees in a tranquil country-like setting. Whew, not bad, huh? Sound like a perfect vacation spot? It is for your dog. That's right. All Dogs Rule Day Camp and Sleepover is the premium place for your four-legged friends to spend their time away from you. Whether you are going away for one night or two-night getaway or an extended vacation, All Dogs Rule is the place your dog wants to be when they can't be with you. When your dogs return home, you'll have to ask, whose vacation was better? The dogs.
Definitely the dogs.
The dogs. So check out their website at alldogsrule.com or give them a call, 805-524-1100, and your dog will thank you, and I'm sure Russ and Karen will thank you, and everybody will thank you. Okay, it is 7:26. This is LA Talk Radio. You are listening to The Writer's Block, and we have, of course, Bobby Jean Bell, and we have our guest tonight, Peggy Chambers, who should be on the line. And are you back with us, Peggy?
I am here.
And Bobby?
I'm here.
Oh, good. See, you didn't hang up on yourself tonight. What's going on with that?
I haven't hit the mute button by mistake, which is what I did last week.
Guys, you know, you sound like you're sitting right in the studio with us.
She does.
Well, I am. I am. I'm just a few hundred feet away.
Yeah, a few 100, 200, 300, 500, 600 miles away.
She's in the ghost co-pilot.
That's right. You're the ghost co-pilot.
It's the ghost co-pilot.
Okay, let's switch gears a little bit, Peggy, if you don't mind. And let's talk a little bit about Return to Glom's Valley.
Okay.
As I told you the other night, I was reading it, and I finished it pretty much right after I talked to you. And I have to tell you, I was enthralled in this book. It just, of course, I normally don't like fantasy, but this one just grabbed me from the very, very first paragraph. Would not let me go. And it has given me the desire to buy the first copy, which is the first one.
Glom's Valley.
So I'm going to have to buy Glom's Valley. But I loved the story. I loved the people. And I love the ghost, who is a little Viking ghost named Glom. And you have a character mm-hmm. in this book that when this character came out and just saved the day, the character's name is Trondelag. And would you like to tell our listening audience who Trondelag is?
Well, Trondelag is a dragon that lives in the pond next to the house.
Right.
The pond is up against a hill, and back behind the pond are all these caves, and the dragon lives in the caves.
Right.
And she comes out at night and feeds, but most of the time she lives off of hickory nuts and dragonflies.
Dragonflies
are falling down into her pond.
But she's huge, and she wedges herself into those caves.
Mm-hmm. Right. She is huge. When she finally comes out to save the day, and she's bright-colored ruby. She has her underneath side is all ruby, and her wings are ruby with gold edges. And
right.
She's fire-breathing, of course.
And she's so gentle. And she loves Ethan.
Gives him a ride back.
Right. She and then at the end, of course, all the protagonists are riding on the back of Trondelag back to the cab. Well, it's so cool. It's something that should be in a movie. Because it was just the way you wrote it was it was so awesome. So, Mike, kudos to you. And I'm a sucker for dragons anyway. Richard is too. Nodding. Yeah. But Trondelag, Trondelag is cool. Trondelag is cool. I liked all the little fairies and the imps. Not the imps. The imps were bad guys. The fairies and
the imps.
Mm-hmm. But the whole book was really well done. And I loved it. I loved from start to finish. So now I have to go read about when he was a boy at Gloom's Valley and what things were like 14 years prior to this story taking place.
14 years prior.
Right.
And well, I was telling you the other night that, I'm sorry.
Go ahead. No, please go ahead.
I was going to tell you that the other night I was telling Jim that this Hevener Runestone is real. It is in the southeastern part of Oklahoma. And it's a big monolith with this carving on it that some people say is Viking. Other people say it's not. But it makes for a really good story.
Right.
And down at that runestone every year, they have a Viking fest. And I've gone down there and sold my books. And they are in the gift shop down there. And it's an awful lot of fun to go down there. And people get into this Viking thing. Pretty heavily.
It's amazing because we're talking Oklahoma, not mm-hmm. Minnesota or New York or the St. Lawrence Seaway. We're talking Oklahoma, which is really cool.
Yeah. Well, there's a geologist based out of Minnesota that made a whole TV series about how the Vikings were all over the place for the longest time here in America. I think at one point he had them in Arizona, so it's a thing.
Well, yeah. They had to cart their ships to Arizona.
Pretty much, yeah.
Well,
maybe they had a dragon.
The rivers might have been a little different then.
That's true. Maybe they had a dragon.
They may not have had a dragon. Mm-hmm. You never know. It's 1,000 years ago.
I mean, it would be very cool to own your own dragon. Of course, if it's a dragon, you can't own him. But it'd be like really cool to say that my friend is a dragon. Now, I've said my friend has dragon breath.
This dragon came down from Greenland with them and followed them down and lived in the cave with it, right there beside them.
I mean, it's such an amazing story. And to learn all Ethan knows, and now he's become an archaeologist, and he is, mm-hmm. is learning how to dig up and find relics of the past, and of course he has Gloom, which Cern hands him to him. Now he's got this very cool sword, and they're trying to figure out what the writing is on it, and they say it's pre-Viking, so, wow.
I'm getting the feeling you really, 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 really like this book.
I liked this book.
I think he did.
I have never seen him this wired over a book.
Animated over a book.
Yeah, he's really... Now, I got a quick question. The target audience for Gloom's Valley, both books, what age group were you writing for?
Don't go there.
I'm going somewhere else. Calm down.
No, I said it's YA, but, you know, anything any older than 15 was still fine with me. I don't care.
But, I mean, it's such a difference from the other books that you've written. So those are two pretty mm-hmm. different audiences, right?
Right.
How difficult was it for you to transition back and forth to writing to those two different audiences?
That's a great question, actually.
I wrote the first Gloom when my grandson was young. I originally wrote it for him. And then when I wrote the second one, I had to try to make this 25-year-old man fall back into his childhood, which was a little bit difficult. Uh-huh. You know, I kept talking about the fact that he hadn't bathed in days because he was too busy playing with his friends.
Right.
But originally, my grandson's name is Ethan, and so the first book was written for him. Uh-huh. And then it kind of just taken on a life of its own. But it's been a lot of fun.
Well, I like the fact that he picked up a little friend, Mac. And she mm-hmm. then, as soon as he introduced her to the valley, she became a believer and got to meet Gloom and was totally taken aback by this big, huge dragon that lived down there in the pond that was eating peanut butter snacks out of her hand. I love that. That was so fun. this big old snaky tongue comes out and grabs the little peanut butter snack, pulls back in the water.
So did Ethan jump in there and help you out when you were writing that first one, or was it just something you did for him and presented to him afterwards?
Yeah, it was something I did for him. I took him down to the Heaven of Runestone and showed it to him.
Okay.
At the time, and I just told him about it. He is about to graduate from high school, but back then he thought grandma's writing was cool.
There you go.
Now, probably not so much.
Well, you know what? You should ask him again. Now, he has kids of his own now, right?
Older.
How old
not
is
yet.
He?
He's a senior in high school.
Oh, he's a senior. Okay, well, we hope he doesn't have kids then.
Uh-huh. No, let's hope not. Let's not go there yet.
You never know. Those seniors get sneaky. You know, I've been remiss. And if you would like to call and talk to Peggy, the number here in the studio is 818-602-4929. Again, that's 818-602-4929. And if you want to talk just about Trondelag, man, you got the right dude, because I love that dragon.
That's the first paragraph of the book.
Pretty much, no.
Introduces her, yeah.
Go ahead.
If I could just say that where I see similarities in the writing is you're just so descriptive, and you describe a landscape so beautifully, from the way it looks, the way it shimmers, the way it smells, you know, that you put us right there, whether it's Gloam's Valley or it's Sand Hill. And I think Richard's question is fabulous. How do you address two different audiences and two very different genres? But I also see that that some of your gift is certainly in how you craft your sentences and how you describe things you transport us. We're willing to follow you wherever you take us.
That's a good point.
Thank you.
Because that really is the truth. I noticed that you did not mention Oklahoma until the very last of the book. The runestone being in Oklahoma and the forest and everything else. Mm-hmm. And I thought, in your imagination and your mind as it's racing around these dragons and these imps and fairies and ghosts, that it could virtually be anywhere. And as it turns out at the end of the book, it is Oklahoma. And you do talk about the runestone in Oklahoma. And we had, of course, discussed that the other night. So when you came upon that in the book, I thought, she really does know what she's talking about. I like it. So,
well, I don't know if we go that far.
So when you're writing, Peggy, when you're sitting down and you're concocting a story, and pulling what's left of your hair out, and you just can't get everything to fit, what is Don doing? Is he sitting in the living room with a bottle of Jack Daniels, or is he there with you?
You know, my husband was in radio for a while, and he was a journalist, and he's one of the best proofreaders I know anywhere.
Oh, excellent.
He does like my work. Yes, he likes my work, and he always applauds what I do. And when I'm all finished, and when the editor's gone through it, then I hand it to Don, because he finds things they don't find.
Right.
And he's really great about that. He really is.
Well, you know, because
he's probably tired of going down to Hevener with me, I think. He might get tired of those Viking fests.
There you go. Well, you know, all of our work goes through two or three edits and proofreading, and so we catch as many errors as we can. However, I see books from Putnam or the big houses that still have errors in them. I mean, I don't think you can catch them all. But, I mean, you can catch most of them. I mean, Richard and I just finished a book, and right as we were going to press, I caught a bunch, two or three errors. I said, crap, you know. So I had to go back and redo it. Anyway, so your process, you write during the day, write at night?
Well, I used to write at night when I was working. Now when I'm retired, I can write any time I want to, unless I'm in the middle of something. I am the president of my local writers club. I'm involved with a lot of things down at the library that I do, volunteer work for our library, and I stay busy. You know, one thing I didn't plan to do when I retired was sit down in the rocker and not get back up. So,
yeah. Do you find yourself busier now that you're retired?
You know, people always said that, and I thought that was the dumbest thing I ever heard.
Nope.
Until I retired and went, yep, no.
I retired last year, and I got to tell you, I am constantly doing something. We're
because
busy.
You can't. Otherwise, you had to wait until after 5 o'clock, you know.
Well, yeah.
And,
yeah.
Now you can do whatever, whenever.
Yeah, I like
it's
it, you know.
And we stay busy, and I like to stay busy. So.
Well, I find myself in my office writing some. When I get to write up my own stuff, I'm still in my pajamas, and it's like 10:30, 11 o'clock in the morning. There's no reason to get dressed. I'm in there pounding away, you know. Of course, we get people coming over.
We get up about 7, but we may not get dressed till 10.
There you go. I'm liking it. I like it.
Yeah, that commute from the bedroom to the office.
It's the traffic is horrible, especially if you have a golden retriever.
Oh, that's gridlock. That's gridlock.
I have a question for Peggy. Can I jump in for a
no,
minute?
No, you cannot. No, of course you can.
Peggy, in a couple of our most recent shows, we've had authors talk a little bit about reading their reviews.
Good question.
If they do or they don't, if they do, you know, how do they handle a review that isn't
stellar.
A great review? And I was curious, do you read reviews and what do you, how do you handle what you read?
I do. I always try to keep up on all the reviews that I have. And I know I've had a few really, my very first book called The Apocalypse Sucks. Had some bad reviews, or at least one that I remember. And of course, I remember it because it was really bad, and it just, I sat there sweating, you know, thinking, I can't believe somebody just wrote that about me. But it's hard. It's very difficult to see that, but at the same time, it makes you realize that maybe they were right. You know, why did you not mention Oklahoma until the end of the book or some such thing? It makes you stop and think, and it's nice to know they read it, and that's important.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So it's not easy, but, you know, maybe it can be a learning experience.
There's a writer that we've had on the show that will be back on the show, and we told her before that you're not going to like every review you get. I mean, reviews are nothing more than people's opinions, and, you know, take them with a grain of salt. You know, right. Somebody could be stroking you if they're giving you 5 stars. We don't, I mean, you never know. Mm-hmm. So just, yeah. I mean, take them and conglomerate them into one pile, and, you know, if you come out with 3.35 stars, then I guess that's not bad. You know,
no,
but I read reviews, but I don't base my writing on them.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, you know, and so, I mean.
Well, I saw one the other day that was 5 stars that said something like YA children's book. And that's what it said. It said 5 stars, and the review was YA
children's
book. YA
children's book.
Well, yeah, that just didn't say anything. Yeah. And it wasn't my review, but I thought. This one must have been paid for. Or something.
I got one on Jonah Blue that was 5 stars, and the writer said, "Really good story, a lot of fun. It could be better."
Yeah, and 5 stars.
So did
you give me 5 stars and a could be better book?
Could be better.
Yeah, wow, interesting.
My
well,
favorite one
in
was
in this day and age. You know, everybody years gone by, reviewers reviewed. Today, you know, everyone can review. Review a business. You know, you can just anonymously put it something out there. I mean, we all have to kind of develop thick skins, because you never know.
Right.
Somebody's going to review something about you somewhere.
Right.
Just, you know.
Right. Well, I remember the line that David Niven gave in "Please Don't Eat the Daisies," and it's become just everybody uses it now. But it's everyone's a critic.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So
my favorite ones are the 1 stars where they clearly have not read the book. They're just mad at something you said somewhere else. And you know, this is really. But my favorite one was one I got the other day. It's 3 stars, and it said, "What kind of an acid trip was this?" And I had to reply to that.
Oh, no.
I went, "It was the best kind, but thanks for reading." And you know what book that had to go to?
Which one?
Escaping Infinity.
Oh.
Yeah. I mean,
Infinity.
We love that book.
Yeah.
Some people still ask me what I was smoking when I wrote it.
I mean, that's a good question,
it
Richard.
Is,
what were you smoking?
I ain't answering.
But Peggy, so what are we working on now, Peggy, that's just going to be coming out in You're going to start another Sand Hill book.
Mm-hmm. I am working on a Sand Hill book. I have a manuscript right now I'm trying to find a home for that I've got some feelers out on. I started another series on a lake. Notice theme here. We have water again.
Mm-hmm.
This one is on a lake over here in Oklahoma called Keystone. It's over by Tulsa. It's a big lake. And I call this the Keystone Lake series, and the first one was called Blooming Justice.
Mm.
And it was about a young girl who goes to college, and she's working in her aunt's law office while she goes to school, and she helps bring a rapist to justice, someone she knows from high school.
Hmm.
And so, you know, it's, again, a suspense novel, but it's the girl is fairly young, not like some of the other, you know, like my first one in Secrets of Sand Hill Island, the woman was 50.
Right, mm-hmm. right. Mm-hmm. And a great character, I might add.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Meg.
Yeah, Meg was terrific. And Victoria and Mike were just real rat bastards.
They really were. But they got theirs.
Alex in the first book and Neil in the second book are kind of similar in that, you know, they are smitten and they're not going to give up. And they both kind of still wonder to themselves, though, you know, like, why would she love me? You know, but I got to have her. So
there you go. Hey, in the five minutes we have left.
They both have passed.
Yes. Oh. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
In the 5 minutes we have left, what's your thoughts on writer's block, Peggy?
What's my thoughts on what now?
Writer's block. Not the show, but.
Oh, writer's block.
Well, it could be.
Or both.
Well, do I have writer's block or am I on?
Or have you ever
block?
Gotten it?
Go.
No, you're on writer's block. Have you ever had it?
I think. Have I ever had it?
Yes.
I don't think so, really. It seems to me like most of the time, if I do have a problem, if I get to a point that is bothering me, I'll go write another spot.
Mm-hmm.
I'll go down to the bottom and write the climax and then come back up and try to put it back together.
Gotcha.
That works best for me.
Gotcha. Bobby Jean, are you writing all these down? You're supposed to be.
I intend to re-listen to the podcast and type as fast as I can. Try to capture them all.
I like the ones that say doesn't exist. That's their answer.
Doesn't exist.
But there's always so many other pearls that get shared in this show besides the answer to that question.
Oh, I know.
There's just marvelous things for readers and writers to benefit from.
Especially new writers. They get a big kick out of this show.
Peggy, I know you belong to some writing groups. Would you advocate? Obviously, you believe in that. How does that help would a writer or a new writer or an established writer?
It helps me an awful lot. It helps me just emotionally. And it also, we have critique groups. We get together every few weeks and critique each other's work. The Oklahoma Writers Federation has a... they have a conference once a year in May, which is coming up soon, and we have all kinds of publishers, editors, agents that come and speak, and you can pitch your book to them and such. It takes place over about 3 days in Oklahoma City. And I really do think that it helps to just be around like minds, mm-hmm. people that are up against the same thing you're up against.
Oh, totally. I totally get that. Okay, well, why don't you let us know how we can get a hold of you, how we can contact you, your email and your website and blog and whatever else you got going.
Okay.
If you wouldn't mind.
You can watch my blog that I put out on Sundays. It is peggylchambers.com, www.peggylchambers.com.
Okay.
And I also... I have an Instagram account. I didn't write any of this down, of course, and have it in front of me. Naturally.
They say the memory is the first
account,
thing to go.
Facebook account. My Facebook account is a very old one, and it is brawars.com. Facebook, brawars.com.
Bra Wars, that is old.
Bra Wars has to do with the very first book, The Apocalypse Sucks.
Gotcha. So. Okay. All righty. And, hey, thanks for spending this time with us. It was a hoot. And when you get some more books written, or you get the other Sandhill Island written, give the bookie a call.
I will.
And,
thank you.
And she will, of course, get you scheduled. It'll be now 2019, but...
Probably. Right on.
We are actually booked up through September, I believe, now.
Yeah.
So we're... that's it. So anyway, thanks again, Peggy, for joining us. It's been a hoot having you. And as always, we appreciate your time spent with us on the radio. And I hope you had as good a time as we did having you.
I did.
Okay.
Thank you, Peggy.
Thank you, Peggy. And y'all bye-bye. Just... Okay, bye-bye. Take care.
Bye, Peggy.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Bye.
And real quick, we have next week, we have Kelly Charon. And Peggy Wheeler the following Thursday. And 1st of April, we have John Lennett Pielmeyer. And, of course, on the 19th, we have John Sanford and Bobby Jean Bell will be in studio with us.
Yay!
So we'll be glad to have her back where we can control her.
Oh.
Well, Cowboy Festival is coming up in April, April 20th.
21st, 22nd.
And Bobby Jean will be there on the Saturday, of course. If you want to see her, that's when you're going to have to be there to visit. And other than that, I have no other announcements.
About the only thing I got is if you're in the Atlanta area around Labor Day on September 1st and 2nd, I will be there for Dragon Con. I'm a confirmed attending professional.
Our publicist got that for you.
Yes, he did. He did a great job. So I'll be wandering about there, and hopefully I'll have a signing table. I have no idea what they're going to do to me, but I'm going, and if I get back in one piece, I'll tell you all about it.
Okay. Okay. For Bobby Jean Bell, Richard Polinelli. Myself, thanks for listening. Another Thursday is, of course, shot in the butt.
Yep.
And we are out of here.